If you're like most people, chances are you have at least one trait or habit you'd like to change. Most bad habits, those you know you'd be much better off without, represent something that stands in your way of success on the job or career, have some negative impact on your relationships with people close and important to you, or they may be negatively affecting your health in some way. Some habits even become sources of self-loathing, in that you put yourself down for them constantly and regard your lack of success in changing them as inexcusable weaknesses. And so an additional negative byproduct of that bad habit is that you may even think less of yourself for having it. As we saw earlier, attitudes are what we call thinking habits. Of course, they can be positive or negative. They can enrich our lives or be self-defeating. By the same token, so can behavioral habits. Much of your success on the job is probably due to positive work habits that you've formed over the years, perhaps even effortlessly. How orderly you keep things is based on your habits, as is your tendency to be early or late, and even things such as how you eat and sleep. However, the habits that seem to concern us the most are our negative habits that result in self-defeating behavior. And what is self-defeating behavior? Well, that's a generic term, and it includes anything you do, either deliberately or undeliberately, consciously or unconsciously, to get into your own way, to undermine yourself, or to sabotage your own life goals. Habits are learned, and that means they can be unlearned, and new ones can be relearned. So if you're talking about negative habits, ones you would like to eliminate, the first step is to know the enemy. This means to identify the habit in detail and visualize what it would be like if you were able to overcome that habit. So perhaps you can start now by asking yourself just what is it exactly that you would like to stop doing or start doing. Behind every habit that needs to be changed, there's an attitude to be challenged or learned as well. For example, if you're trying to stop smoking, undoubtedly you've heard that smoking is an addiction and that you can become chemically dependent on nicotine. But isn't it really your attitude, I will die if I don't have a cigarette, that perpetuates that smoking habit? Or I'll never enjoy social events as much if I can't be puffing away? Or certain activities aren't as much fun unless I'm smoking while doing them? That's right, it's your tendency toward that attitude we now know well as low frustration tolerance that ultimately perpetuates your habit to smoke, assuming that it's your desire to stop. Suppose you're trying to lose weight. I can't think of anyone I've ever met who's complained about a tendency toward overeating who didn't know that you gain a pound for every 3,500 calories you consume over and above that which you burn up. Of course, there's no shortage of diet books and information as to how to take off a certain amount of weight in a certain period of time. So we know it's the amount and type of food which you eat that determines not only your weight, but ultimately your health. Let's look at the attitudes that are usually connected with overeating. I must have that piece of chocolate cake, or I deserve this pizza, or I'm powerless to resist something that's put in front of me that I want regardless of how much I'll regret it later. It's possible and even likely that you tell yourself these things without even realizing it. Just as our habits occur automatically, so do the attitudes and the thoughts behind them. In fact, you could probably even think of a number of attitudes you have and things you tell yourself about smoking or overeating that are quite unique. Your unwanted habit is probably something that's operated for a long time, perhaps before you even realized that it was a problem. For example, if it's your habit to procrastinate, to put things off, the first step is to realize and acknowledge that you procrastinate. Then when you do it, at least you're doing it consciously instead of automatically or unconsciously. This is often the hardest part of changing self-defeating habits, since they may have become so ingrained in your nature. In fact, we even refer to habits as being second nature. And as self-defeating as they may be, because they're so familiar, there's comfort in them. I refer to this attitude as being a comfortable state of discomfort. So the first thing to remember is that as soon as you begin to change, you'll probably experience some discomfort until the new chosen way of being becomes as much second nature as the habit is that you're now trying to change. Let's look at some other common habits and some of the attitudes behind them. If you're an accident-prone driver, Perhaps it's your attitude, people should stay out of my way. Or it would be terrible if I were 5 minutes late. Or driving a car is so boring I can't stand it. So I must get in there and hurry, even if the ultimate consequences of hurrying far outweigh any possible advantages. If you're someone who habitually interrupts others, perhaps it's because you're telling yourself, what I have to say is the only thing that's important. Or if I'm not being listened to, then I'm not being approved of, or I deserve to be paid attention to. The habits of procrastination or eliminating clutter usually have behind them the attitude that this is too overwhelming. Or sure, I'll be sorry later on, but for right now, it feels so good to be doing something other than that dreaded task. Some habits are simply expressions of anxiety, such as fidgeting, chewing pencils, tics, and twitches. Many habits are also what we call blind spots, things that we do without even realizing it, but which are very noticeable to others. Even with blind spots, usually you can recognize enough benefit for you to see how it's to your advantage, nonetheless, to change. Our blind spots are, in fact, those parts of ourselves that are very conscious to other people, but which we ourselves may not be aware of. The classical example of a blind spot is bad breath. It often takes someone else, literally close to us, to point out to us that there is something we should attend to that we may never be able to recognize on our own. So let me go back to a question I asked at the beginning. When it comes to changing habits, what is it that you have identified that's in your best interest to stop doing or to start doing now? If we're talking about changing a bad habit, first identify it in as much detail as possible. What thoughts reinforce your habit? What are you telling yourself that justifies the habit? Why do you even want to change it at this time? Are you ready to make the commitment to do whatever is necessary to effect change? When did it begin? Is there any particular person, place, or thing that triggers this habit more than any other time? For each habit that you would like to break, answer all of those questions to your satisfaction. Knowing what you're dealing with in that amount of detail is a major share of the battle. How would things be different if you were successful in changing this habit? What's an ideal situation? For example, if your goal is to stop smoking, how would your life be more difficult without the crutch of cigarettes? Imagine the ideal situation of being able to give up your habit. You may want to close your eyes and imagine, visualize if you will, how you would feel overall or feel about yourself actually being able to become free of that unwanted habit. Try to savor that positive feeling that comes from the fantasy of being without it. You may want to write your images down so you can remember them. The very images that help you to feel the positive feelings that come from being able to change your habit, since that feeling is much of what you're striving for. When you can conjure up a positive image in your mind, you've established the power to give yourself a tremendous amount of reinforcement when you're facing that inevitable but temporary discomfort that comes with change. For example, if you're trying to lose weight, imagine yourself the ideal weight you'd like to be, as though being overweight were a thing of the past and you were feeling the rewards of your hard work in breaking that habit right now. Or, if you're trying to stop procrastinating on a project, imagine yourself having completed that project and reaping all the rewards that both finishing the project and putting an end to your procrastination has gotten you. The next step is to develop a plan of attack. Use all the wisdom that's at your disposal to find out how you can best affect the change that you're struggling to bring about. For example, if you're struggling with overeating, this step involves planning your diet, establishing an allowable number of calories, and literally visualizing your progress for the first few crucial days and weeks. Imagine yourself advising someone else on the logistics of changing that habit. If you find this difficult, you may wish to seek advice at this point, or do some reading on the very thing that you're trying to change. This is the technical part of the task. Point A was identifying the habit. Point B was the goal. What you're doing now is drawing the shortest possible line between those two points. Sometimes it's important to break your plan of attack into small, manageable parts. For instance, if you're procrastinating on a project, one of the reasons may be that you see the project as being overwhelming. But by looking at it as a series of smaller steps that you can take without feeling overwhelmed, your attitude toward the entire project may surprisingly change. To stop smoking, come up with a plan to go cold turkey or plan to taper off gradually. Some people find various types of nicotine substitutes helpful, while others find it helpful to plan stopping at a time when they're likely to be under much less stress, such as a long weekend or during a vacation. Make an ironclad commitment to yourself to follow your plan. Make sure you have built-in time factors, and then announce it to all the people around you who can act for you as sources of support. Support is for many the most important step in changing a difficult habit. For some people, this might be a formal self-help group, while for others, just having someone you could turn to during those periods of frustration and even intense cravings is crucial to get through the moments that could trigger your tendency to reindulge in that automatic self-defeating thought or behavior when it begins to overtake you. Support is often the power tool that will help you to get past those difficult moments between the time when you've given up a self-defeating behavior and the time when change becomes automatic and second nature. You may want to write up a behavioral contract specifying how you intend to attack your habit each day, and if you live up to it, reward yourself in some way. Buy yourself a small gift or do something you enjoy doing that you don't ordinarily take time out for. Sometimes giving yourself rewards, which we call positive contingencies, won't quite do the job. That's where negative contingencies, often a stronger source of motivation, come into play. A negative contingency is some form of punishment that you subject yourself to should you go backwards. They are very commonly used as a part of rational emotive therapy to break habits. They could be as simple as purposely doing something you don't enjoy, such as cleaning your house, staying at home on a night when you would ordinarily be going to a social activity that you look forward to, or even giving money to an unpopular cause that you thoroughly disbelieve in. Positive and negative contingencies are custom designed. I once had a woman who had been to many forms of treatment and just about every kind of self-help group there is to lose weight. She was about 50 pounds overweight and claimed that she was powerless to stay within her chosen diet. After much discussion, we came up with a very effective negative contingency. It seemed that there was someone she felt very unattracted to who kept calling her up for a date and who she was constantly turning down. She wrote this person a love letter and even put a stamp on it. We agreed that I would hold the letter and that the first time she did not stay within her weight plan, she and I would walk to the mailbox together and mail it. Needless to say, the thought of this individual receiving a love letter from her was so intimidating that she, for the first time in her life, shed weight in a way that actually made me concerned for her health. The fact of the matter is, you can do it. You need only to find what motivates you. That is the role of contingencies. You may want to take a few minutes now to think about what some contingencies of your own, both positive and negative, may be. With all of this, it's still important to allow yourself a margin of error. If you slip or relapse, learn to forgive yourself again and again. It's that self-acceptance that'll empower you to believe you can ultimately succeed, and that's the attitude that will help you to succeed the next time. We are all fallible, which is a fact not to be used as an excuse, but as a reassurance when you've done your best and failed. If you're still having difficulty, think about what may be what we call your secondary gains. They are the reasons underneath the surface that keep your self-defeating behavior in place. Sometimes these are also called higher order problems. For example, if you're having difficulty giving up smoking, it could be that you use cigarettes literally as a smoke screen. With your smoke screen removed, you may be much more uncomfortable relating to people in certain social situations. I once had somebody tell me that he never worried about his future until he stopped smoking because he didn't think he'd be around very long. He needed to come to grips with the idea of planning for a long life before he could stop smoking. Many people who refuse to stay on diets to lose weight really fear other issues that losing weight may force them to face, such as losing the excuse to avoid meeting members of the opposite sex, or the fears related to dealing with the intimacy that could follow. One obese married man whose weight was really jeopardizing his health once told me that if he were to lose the weight he needed to lose, he feared that he would be seen as attractive by other women. Thus, new options would tempt him to leave his marriage, which at the time was not working well. However, once the issues in his marriage were addressed, he was able to lose the weight he needed to lose. Allow yourself a certain amount of anxiety and don't let that set you on a backward course. Refer to and re-listen to other tapes in this series that deal with those specific problems such as low frustration tolerance, perfectionism, stress, and anxiety. Changing a habit, especially a long-standing one, can trigger just about every emotion and form of stress known to mankind. But the good news is, nothing can defeat you except your own tendency to declare yourself powerless and to give up. This is an obviously self-defeating attitude that is totally within your power to control. So a major part of changing your unwanted habits is seeing what that payoff is for you to continue having them. Once that is eliminated, you've identified the habits, established goals, developed a plan of attack, and gotten the support you need to carry out that plan of attack, you'll be amazed at how much power you have over those things you may have thought of as being out of your control. And once you master that attitude, you can apply it to any area of your life.